Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to MRSN, the Michigan Regional Sports Network.
It's time to enter the locker room. The coach's show of Michigan Admirals Minor League Football.
Good Wednesday evening to you around the country and around the world on Blog Talk Radio and the Michigan Regional Sports Network. Coach Donald Matthews here with the locker room, as well as our two partners in crime, Bill Schnornberg. What's up, Bill?
Yes, sir.
And the great Lon Truck Turner.
Hey, what's happening? I don't know about no crime, man, because, you know, with this whole OJ thing going on, all those black folks, we got spotlight on us. So, you know, you might want to lay off that crime talk, man.
Well, you know what? You know, it's lucky for us that OJ isn't black.
Can I start off by saying one thing?
Yes, sir.
Happy birthday, Truck Turner.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Today is Mr. Turner's birthday.
He's 54 yes, years old, ladies and gentlemen.
He only looks 54.
Yeah.
He's actually, what are you now? 21? 22?
36. For the 15th time. For the fourth, 15th time.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, happy birthday to you. I also want to wish my youngest daughter Angie happy birthday today. She's 27 today.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we do share a birthday.
Yes, sir. Now that that protocol has been established, we got stuff to talk about tonight. We are going to talk about the USFA championship game that was this past Saturday night. I hope you was able to watch the simulcast on the Michigan Regional Sports Network's website. Aaron and Devin did a great job on that broadcast last Saturday night. Also going to talk about, of course, about the games over the weekend. Bill's going to have his 22 seconds to gloat. That's all he did is 22 seconds, and I'm cutting his ass off. And of course, we'll all get the gloat about Ohio State. And how wonderful they played Saturday. So, we'll all get a chance to do that in due time, definitely in due time. First thing I want to talk about, though, and I know both of you guys have probably been chomping at the bit to talk about this. I want to talk about our old friend Ed Hockley. He's taking a lot of stuff, you know. And I happen to think that Ed Hockley is one of the best referees in the National Football League. But he fudged up.
You know, and the thing about, watching that, and the league nowadays, referees included, are so protective of quarterbacks. And I think that he just, saw that, Jay Cutler was probably going to get murdered, and hit the whistle real quick, not realizing that a turnover had ensued. And he blew it. He got whistle happy on him, and they're gonna mark it down though. They're gonna put it in his file. But it's just he made a mistake. He's human.
And I really don't think that he should be defined by this one play. Yeah, he made a mistake and he owned up to the mistake right away. And and I'm sure that doesn't make the Chargers feel any better because that call basically lost the game for them. But, Bill, you got a comment on this?
Well, I just find it funny that even though he blew the call and he admitted to it right away, and how many officials are going to do that? But, two, you still had a chance to stop him again, and you couldn't do it. And that's been their problem the last 2 weeks. You can't stop him. You let two teams now walk down the field on you in the waning minutes of the game to score on you. So I think maybe they need to look in the mirror first off.
And, it's like I tell, when I hear folks on the field fussing about the officiating. You know, all the refs took the – if you don't put your team, if you play well enough not to be in a situation to where the referees can't take the game from you, then you don't have to worry about the referees. If that game, that game hadn't been that close, that call wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, that's true enough. You know, that's what makes this a whole lot more different than the previous week when we and me, myself in particular, raked the referees at the Washington BYU game over the Colts. I think this is a totally different situation. Both of them were game-changing plays, and they, you know, and in that way are similar, that caused the other team to lose. But you know, first of all, the rule itself.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, talk people through the rule itself, Bill. You know, you're knowledgeable on this kind of stuff. I hate the tuck rule, and I hate the arm going forward without the ball kind of thing.
Well, any time the quarterback makes any kind of motion to throw the football, it's your boy's rule. It's the Tom Brady rule it's the tuck rule. And basically the rule, what Hockley thought was, with his motion at full speed. Now, they showed highlights of it being slow. And I'm giving him the best. I think Hockley's a good referee. I give him the benefit of the doubt because behind the play with him moving so fast to throw it, it looks like the ball came out when he was making that motion to do it. But if you make any kind of motion to throw the football, it's an incomplete pass. They jacked up the review, and this whole thing, well, the whistle blew the play dead. Oh. So anytime a whistle blows, the play's dead? I mean, they butchered it from start to finish. And it couldn't happen to a crappier coach like North Turner.
Yeah, we know how you feel about North Turner. But, you know, I think that people should give Ed Hockley the benefit of the doubt there. Because you know, he has historically been such a great referee. And I'll be the first to say that he got that wrong.
I'm not going to tell him because he'll break me over my knee if I tell him that he blew it.
And see, I know you're scared of Ed Hockley because he got them guns, man.
Yeah.
Them arms or something else. He definitely works out. I mean, but obviously he got that play, that call wrong. And really, for him to be a stand-up guy, you know, and he has to know that that's not going to help North Turner out in any way, shape, or form. And it might even make him even madder than what he was, you know. But it's for him to stand up and say, yeah, you know, I messed up. You know, you very seldom see anybody in a striped shirt that will come up to you and man up and say that, especially not too much longer after the incident happens and go, yeah, you know, I messed up. I really think that people should you know, lay off Ed.
Or he'll break you in two. He will break you.
He do got some guns, don't he?
He's not like that. Which official was that messed up the coin toss at the Thanksgiving Day game that year? Steelers line.
I know what you're talking about. I can't remember his name though.
Exactly.
Aaron knows that. You know, Aaron knows everything. He'll tell me in a second on the web chat who that guy was.
But it's not like he completely, you know, like that was a completely boneheaded thing. How do you mistake heads for tails? That's like the one responsibility you have before the game starts is to do the coin toss. And you mess that up and, you know, you see none of us can remember his name. But, you know, the whole Ed Hockley thing, like it's just like Bill was saying, it's live. It's in real time, and those plays happen bang bang. And he's human. He made a snap. You know, he reacted, and it was just the wrong reaction. You know, get over it. Chargers hadn't been in that position, and it wouldn't have been a big deal.
Now, you know, conversely, on the other, Aaron, what we was talking about is the guy that messed up the coin toss. With the Lions and the Steelers a few years ago.
And it had to be a brother, didn't it?
No, it was a white guy.
No. Oh, he's a white guy.
I thought it was a brother.
No, there's only one brother. They only let one brother have be the head referee.
Yeah. I don't know why I was thinking it was a brother that did that.
No.
Why are you all of a sudden on your birthday on black on black crime all of a sudden? Why are you blaming the brothers for everything? White people mess up too.
I was watching the OJ trial, man. You know, and just you know.
You know, you really need to lay off of court TV, man, because you know. I don't care what you say, OJ gonna get off again. And there's going to be anarchy in the streets.
You know, I think the exact opposite.
Thank you, Aaron. Phil Luckett.
Thank you. But I think this whole OJ thing, OJ is going to be the first person to get the death penalty for armed robbery. Because they look at him like, okay, you got by us one time, and you know there ain't a speck of pepper on that jury. OJ going to jail. From now on, he's going to be the first person ever in the history of history to get the death penalty for armed robbery. For what he did before, because he got away with it before. Hey, can't no brother kill two white folk and get away with it? And then cause riots when he get away with it? No. OJ going to jail.
I'm telling you, there's going to, y'all going to have anarchy in the streets because he's going to get off again. Y'all watch.
See, if I was OJ,
I don't even know why we're discussing this. Isn't this one of the taboo names on the locker room?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that was on the banned list. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's the first name on the banned list.
Well, see, the first name that I ever knew, you know, before I came on board, the first name I ever knew was the old Roy boy, Barry Balco Bonds. And then Terrell Pryor.
Oh yeah, he's right up there too. But you know him and OJ and a couple other guys.
Yeah, see OJ, that was before I came on board, so you know I wasn't aware that protocol had been established. So I'm sorry, I'll lay off OJ. He going to jail.
Because it's the Hurts man, the steroid guy, and the worst offensive coordinator in the greater Flint area. Those three names are banned.
All those guys are taboo topics.
Yep.
I just want to remind you guys that later on, another topic that really gets me going, the Detroit Lions. We're going to discuss a little of what's going on the last couple of weeks with the Detroit Lions. But even more so than that, we're going to be talking about this being their 75th anniversary year. And each of the three of us has compiled a list of we think – should be on the 75th anniversary team. And we're going to compare notes, and you guys out there that are listening tonight, feel free to chime in on the web chat with your picks for the 75th anniversary team for the Detroit Lions. On the other side of that coin with Ed Hockley, the call that Mike Shanahan made to go for two after that touchdown, the man got the guts of a burglar.
Wouldn't you do that with all the momentum you had anyways? They ran the same play twice, by the way.
The truth of the matter is I would have kicked and went for and took my chances in overtime. And I think probably 9.5 out of every 10 coaches in that same situation probably would have did the same thing, and that's probably the safe way to go. But, you know, I have to give Shanahan all the credit in the world. That is the mark of a guy that is in absolutely no fear for his job.
You know, the funny thing about that is if they hadn't made it, then they'd be calling for his head right now.
No, they wouldn't.
Not
if,
him.
If they, not Shanahan.
There have been somebody out there with orange and blue paint on their face, you know, with marching down the street calling for him to be hanged in the town square.
No. You know, if he had any kind of thought about that, he would have kicked.
Yeah, that's true.
That man has absolutely the most secure job in the National Football League.
You mean other than Matt Miller?
Well, yeah, okay, second.
the
point is, the difference is here, is that Shanahan does not have to wave dirty pictures over the owner's head to keep his job.
That's true. But I got a question for you, Coach. Why do you think he went for two instead of just going for the, you know, instead of going?
Well,
for
you know, there's several schools of thought, and I Bill brought up one about the, you know, the momentum part. I think it was either that or the fact that he thought maybe his team didn't have nothing left for overtime, and I got to win this game now if I'm going to win it, you know?
Right. But
They didn't stop him on that drive. You already got him on your heels. They're already ticked off about the call. I would have went for it. You could tell that he had thought about that. It didn't just pop into his head, let's go for two. I think that whole drive, he thought, if we go down and score, we're going for two. Because that did just, he goes, well, if we score, oh, we scored, okay, let's go for two. He must have thought about that whole drive, that if we score here, we're going for two.
I think he had it in the back of his head that whole way down the field, for sure. But, you know, that's what they pay them guys all that money for, to make them big-time decisions. You know, if they work, you know, you're that next morning on ESPN, you're a freaking genius. If you don't, Skip Bayless will rip you a new one. I hate that guy, by the way.
He is a dork.
He's right up there with Tony Kornheiser.
He is a dork.
Why is Tony Kornheiser have a job with a microphone in his hand?
If anything, I was wondering why he's even on the Monday night broadcast team. I was sitting there watching that Philly-Dallas game, and I'm like, why is he there?
Because they are trying to make it like the booth in the 70s with the former player, a play-by-play guy, and then a loudmouth journalist.
But
they're trying to do, and it doesn't work. No one is going to be like Howard Cosell.
No, never.
Ever.
I mean, they could put somebody, put Cat Williams in the booth. You know, let's see how that works out. You know, somebody that's, you know, that I will actually listen to.
Well, you know, the problem with that is that they probably don't have enough phone books for him to sit on, you know, so he can be seen over the microphone.
Good point.
Yeah, you got to really think ahead on these things, really.
Good point.
Seriously. And in that same vein with the Monday Night Football game, I know, I think I probably speak for all three of us with that DeSean Jackson gets our Butthole of the Week award.
Yeah, no doubt.
Not for me. I have a different Butthead of the Week.
Tell me yours.
Mine is Josh Howard of the Dallas Mavericks. You know what Josh Howard did?
What did he do this time? Yeah, tell me.
Josh Howard, at a charity flag football game, as the national anthem is being played, they put a phone with a camera on it, and he blurts off, I don't stand here for the national anthem, and he threw out a naughty word, blank the national anthem. I'm black. I don't care about the national anthem.
Wow. Not a good thing to do.
No.
And then he blurred out something about Obama, and that was it. And he's playing ignorance, like, well, I didn't know that they were filming. This is the same moron who goes on national radio and says, oh, yeah, last year I smoked weed. Obviously, he's still smoking weed to make a stupid comment like that. Right now, he should have to live in Mexico for 6 months and then sneak back in with some chumps to get his job back.
The thing about these days, don't people realize there are cameras and microphones everywhere?
Not for him, because he's a freaking moron.
Apparently.
He sucks as a basketball player, and he's got that's why you don't give certain young people a lot of money and a job. Tell them to go work at McDonald's for a week. Or KFC. Halo Burger. Toys R Us.
Now, you know, it's folks that outside of the Great Flint area that don't know what Halo Burger is, so, you know.
Well, I didn't know what Sonic was until I saw the big sign over there on the road the other day. I just see the commercials when they tease me.
Oh, them commercials get on my nerves.
So, yeah. I can't wait for it to be ready.
And me either. I just want something to drink. I don't even want no fire. I just want something to drink.
Huh?
Them drinks look delicious.
Oh. You know what? Everybody talks about them slushies. They put the Slurpees from 7-Eleven to shame.
Yeah, I don't even want a burger, no breakfast burrito. I want a slushie. That's it.
It's coming, dog. It's coming.
Well, they need to stop showing the commercials until it's done. They've been showing the commercials for a good 2 years, and it's still
true enough. True enough. Yeah, it's coming, dog. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the USFA championship game. Later on, we'll also talk about the college games for this past weekend and our picks for our 75th anniversary Detroit Lions team. You know, stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Walter Jackson, outside linebacker of the Michigan Admirals, and you're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Admirals Radio Network.
No matter what's happening on the playing surface, no matter what the other team is doing, no matter what you think the officials are doing, sportsmanship matters. Sportsmanship defines us. It's one of those things that reveals our true character. Sportsmanship is what matters in educational athletics. For more information about sportsmanship, go to the web at MHSAA.com. A public service message from the Michigan High School Athletic Association.
Towers Chiropractic Life Center is the official chiropractor of the Michigan Admirals. With 25 years of service, Towers Chiropractic treats conditions such as headache and fatigue, backaches and neck pain and stiffness. Most private insurances are accepted. Visit Towers at 7487 Calio Road in Mount Morris or call 687-6100 for an appointment today.
Hey, this is Aaron Matthews, play-by-play voice of the 2007 National Champion Lima Warriors. And you're listening to my second favorite football talk show, The Locker Room Live, on blogtalkradio.com and the Admirals Radio Network.
Time now for This Week in the USFA, a weekly look at the premier semi-pro football league in the country. Here's your host, Aaron Matthews.
What a way to end the USFA season. I'm Aaron Matthews. We welcome you to This Week in the USFA, the USFA Championship Recap between the Grand Rapids Thunder and West Virginia Lightning. And what a game it was as we got through the first quarter with a scoreless tie. And then Grand Rapids using its special teams play to get on the board. Dave Polson recovers a fumble in the end zone to make it 6-0 Grand Rapids. A point after attempt was good. And then Grand Rapids able to get a safety as they sacked Lucas Wright in the end zone as he threw the ball away out of the end zone for a 9-0 lead. And then following a 15-yard penalty against Grand Rapids as time expired, Keith DeBoat nailed a 33-yard field goal to send the Thunder into the locker room with a 12-0 lead. West Virginia responds in the second half as Kenny Davis hooks up for his first of two scores on the night. They're going to line up split backs, three receivers, two to the near side with Pennington and Davis on the left and Jones on the right, and they're going to look to throw. Right with time, fires, end zone, caught! Touchdown, Lightning, Kenny Davis!
And that's exactly what they needed. We're back into a ball game now.
That made it 12-6 Grand Rapids. Davis again from 16 yards out at 3:17 of quarter number three. And a two-point conversion, good for the Lightning, made it 14-12 West Virginia. And then John Pennington made him easily the grab of the game and potentially the grab of the year for the Lightning. Lightning line up in the shotgun with three receivers and a movement free play there as a right is going to roll to his right. Another flag comes in right with time. He'll look deep and fire. That ball's caught!
And what a catch!
Touchdown, Lightning! What a catch on that play, John Pennington! The two-point conversion made it 22-12 in favor of West Virginia. And then Steve Jones added his 22nd touchdown of the season from 4 yards out, made it 28-12. Grand Rapids, though, still showing they had signs of life in them. Aaron James on the quarterback keeper from 5 yards out, and a two-point conversion good, made it 28-20. West Virginia then turned the ball over on downs, giving Grand Rapids an opportunity to put some points on the board and force overtime. Grand Rapids gets inside the 20 and down to the 14, where the fourth down drama would commence. Grand Rapids will line up in the gun. They'll go four receivers. Tomaszewski, mind you, lined up slot left, single back, is Mitchell. Tomaszewski goes into motion from left to right, lining up a bunch of trips. Ball came loose on the ground. James is going to look. He'll fire. Enzo Tomaszewski. Cordo incomplete. And the West Virginia Lightning are a kneel down away from a USFA championship. One kneel down later, and the West Virginia Lightning are the USFA champions for 2008 with a 28-20 win over the Grand Rapids Thunder. Wright's four touchdown passes garnering him game MVP honors. It looks like the season for the Lightning isn't over as well, as all signs point to them being invited to the MLFN National Championships the weekend of January 18th. And that is going to do it for this season's edition of This Week in the USFA. We appreciate you joining us throughout the season. We'll keep you updated as best as we can during the offseason, especially after the league meetings commence in Pennsylvania. Until next year, I'm Aaron Matthews. We'll talk to you next time on This Week in the USFA.
All right. I want to congratulate the West Virginia Lightning on winning the USFA championship. I got to tell you, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall at halftime Saturday night. I mean, trailing 12 to nothing and really not playing well. Whatever was said in the locker room at halftime, it was definitely a different team that came out in that second half.
See, you know, I've been on the bad side of a few of those locker room things. I wouldn't want to have been a fly on the wall because I'd have felt sorry for them guys because, man, y'all
you
let
know,
us have it.
You know about what was said, right?
Y'all let us have it. I mean, you know, I mean, just, ugh. You know, it just.
You know, sometimes things got to be said. You got to be brutally honest, you know. I really thought, you know, from my perspective watching that game, that, you know, even though the Thunder was up 12 to nothing, I got no sense that they were in control of that game. You know, they hadn't scored an offensive touchdown, and really most of their points were gifts, especially that touchdown right before halftime. You know, if they had been moving the ball some, you know, I think if I was the Thunder, I would have felt a lot better going in with that lead at halftime. But there was no way you're going to shut out the Lightning. That game, that you were going to have to score some points, and they didn't do that until too late.
See, the thing about the Thunder, you know, and I congratulate those guys too for making it, you know, that far, especially being well, a four seed, you know, in the playoffs, going down to Lima and, you know, knocking them. You know, they took the long road and they made it to the championship game. They came up short, but you know, they made it. But
yeah,
the Thunder is kind of, they're one of those weird teams where you never know what you're going to get with them. You know, one week they may come out and put points on the board, and the next week they may not. But they still find a way to win the game, and which is a sign of, you know, of a good team. But if they ever got to the point where they could put all that together consistently, they're going to be tough.
Well, you know, to use Bill's favorite saying, what the Thunder went through in the playoffs, that was a perfect storm. You know, they won the first round, which they should have, and the second round, they went to Lima, and things just happened to go right for them that game. They got that gift touchdown at the end of the ball game, was able to upset Lima, and then they were able to host the Western Conference Championship game where they were supposed to have been on the road, and that probably was the determining factor of winning that game. So, you know, they had a lot of things that really went right for them in the playoffs to get them to that point, you know. And, if I was the Thunder, I wouldn't be down over losing this game. You know, as you said, Lon, they took the long road, they took the hard road, and they were able to make it to that point. William.
Well, they did what the Steelers did a few years ago. I mean, they would have, if they would have gone the road, they would have won every road game to get to the championship, except they lost. But they basically, being the lowest seed with the toughest road, got there. So something has to be said for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like I said, I congratulate both teams, but in particular the Lightning going through the season undefeated. Hope you guys get to go down to Florida and play for some big-time hardware early next year. You know, we're going to definitely be pulling for each and every one of you guys. And I do have to say that, you know, Bill, you're my favorite announcer and everything, but, you know, Aaron and Devin, they're right up there with you.
Well, thank you. I always try to walk in the Southern Protocol's footsteps.
And it was, Protocol was established. They did mention you two or three times on Saturday night. And, you know, I know you couldn't get your head through the door.
I was fine. I was still having a tough time walking after my team won Saturday, so.
Speaking of that, okay. You know, like I said, you got 22 seconds to gloat. Go.
I'm not going to gloat. Gloating is when you think that you're going to lose and you have to go, oh, see, told you. I am not going to gloat because I thought that we were going to win. If they didn't win that game, it would have been a big problem. But Michigan basically decided when they showed up after those first two kickoffs that they just didn't feel like winning that football game. And I still don't know what Rich Rodriguez does with his quarterback situation by how he rotates quarterbacks and why even Sheridan even is able to step on the football field is beyond me. Because I've never seen anyone lock on receivers like he does. Because he plays quarterback like Nicolette Sheridan, not like Nick Sheridan.
I'm going to tell you this, and you're going to better write this down, okay? It is indeed going to be a tough season for the Wolverines.
But I told everybody that back in January, and everybody
just Let me tell you this. Hang on. You done had your 22 seconds. I said after that game that I said, look, if we cannot beat Notre Dame, it is going to be a tough year because even you have to admit that the best thing you can say about Notre Dame is that they are mediocre.
They're not mediocre. Okay. But it's a work in progress. They were so bad last year, couldn't do anything. They gave up, I think, 17 sacks in the first two games last year. They haven't given up one.
I'm giving you a compliment.
I understand, but I'm telling you right now that they're not as bad as you think, and I don't think Michigan is as bad as they look. I mean, they did turn the ball over six times. They still had 300 some odd yards of total offense, but I'm just telling you right now, you think that they're so bad. Yeah, your boys got dominated Saturday, but Notre Dame is not as bad as you think. I don't think they're going to win Saturday against Michigan State, but that's going to be Michigan State imploding here in a couple weeks like they always do. So,
well, you know, it takes a little time. You know, I was giving you a compliment. Aaron said he wants 22 seconds for a rebuttal because I know he knows what's coming up next.
Well, the only 22 seconds, the only 22 seconds Aaron gets is when he's with his wife, and I hope he doesn't. I don't want him to use up his 22 seconds.
Oh boy!
I was giving you a compliment. I was giving Notre Dame a compliment. I think to say that they're mediocre is a compliment because last year they were so horrible. They moved up to mediocre.
Okay.
I am not willing, based on how they've played this year, even how they played Saturday, to go any higher than mediocre.
Okay.
That's it.
All
right. That's fine. But we're still 2-0. So.
The best I could say about Ohio State was that they got a field goal. Hooray for them. After that, it went quickly downhill.
I would just wonder, if I'm an Ohio State fan sitting there Saturday, why is now Jim Tressel being raked over the coals? Every big game that they've played the last 5 years, with the exception of the Michigan game, I'm really in those games, they didn't play that well. Why is this man not getting raked over the coals for not winning any big football games? He got a gift in the championship game with Miami. He got a gift of a pass interference call in the end zone. He got a gift. They play terrible in big games.
What I want to know
not
is,
Beckman
you
is
know,
terrible
and maybe, and maybe Mr. Aaron Matthews can enlighten me on this subject, because it seems to me, from what I heard today about their plans for Aaron Pryor, I'm really boxing in my head right here, Terrell Pryor, with their plans for him is that he's going to get the majority of the snaps and possibly start on Saturday. Isn't that it sounds like a little desperation to me already.
They're playing Troy.
But still, you know, why are you going to throw Pryor into this so soon? Nobody at this point of the season is going to beat. Nobody's going to beat, you know, Southern California.
USC had 2 weeks to prepare. They were
right.
They had 2 weeks to prepare. And just like we said last year with New England, when you play the Patriots, when you play USC, you cannot settle for field goals. You have to score points. You have to get touchdowns. You can't settle for field goals.
You know, Aaron, I'm all for getting him more reps. I'm all for getting him more reps. But, you know, when you get into the meat part of your schedule, the meat part of your Big Ten schedule, You're not going to want a true freshman behind the center. You're really not.
I think, what did I hear earlier? They're talking about he's going to take 65% of the snaps this weekend.
Yeah.
He doesn't really need – Beckman been there 17 years. He doesn't need to take a ton of snaps. He already knows the offense. And anyway, it's not a big game there.
This is Randy Goodnight, President of the United States Football Alliance, and you're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and Admiral Radio Network.
This commercial Happy pizzeria, swings and jumbo shrimp taste great. Happy delivers, happy's open late. Be happy, happy pizza. Be happy, it's all good. When you're hungry, real hungry for some yummy food, shout out to Happy, cause it's all good. Be happy.
Happy's Pizza has three Flint area locations, including their brand new location at Miller Road and I-75.
This is Jessica, boss lady of the Michigan Admirals, and you are listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Admirals Radio Network.
I don't know if we're back on, because if we are, someone say something in the chat, because I just called back in.
I can hear you.
Oh, well, I guess we're on then, so, yeah.
I don't hear you.
Yeah, so I can hear you on the phone.
Oh, well, apparently we're...
You and I...
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, Lon, I can hear you just fine, so...
Yeah, I guess I can hear you, so...
Yeah, so I guess we're without Coach for a moment, I would think. So I guess Coach is MIA, so we're going to have to continue making fun of the Ohio State Penitentiary.
I wanted to continue that conversation we were just having, but I don't want to get yelled at.
Yeah, we can't talk about that person with Coach not here. I don't want us to get in trouble. So we're going to... Well, let's continue this little fun talk about the Ohio State University.
I didn't see the game. I didn't see any football Saturday. My best friend got married, so I was tied up with that all day Saturday. So I was checking scores, but I have no input on any college game this weekend.
Well, I mean, really, I think the biggest thing for Ohio State was, and the thing I was saying before, whatever happened with the Gremlins, is when you play a team like USC, no matter who you are, you have got to score touchdowns. You cannot settle for field goals against USC. You have got to score points. You have got to get USC on the ropes and in a hole. That's the only way you can compete with USC as of right now.
And see, and I also wonder if Jim Tressel's kicking himself right now for keeping Beanie Wells in that game, that second game. Because I think, I don't know, how much of a difference do you think he would have made if he had been playing?
I really don't think that he would have made any difference whatsoever on Saturday. I think that they were so keyed up with 2 weeks to prepare that they could have had Ted Ginn Jr. back there and Claret and whoever. And A.J. Hawk could have been back. They were not winning that football game. It just wasn't going to happen. Stuff like that is not going to happen. It doesn't matter. I mean, and I don't think you'll see Beanie Wells for two more weeks. He will not play Saturday, and I really will be surprised if he plays the week after. Because when you get carried off the field, and you can't put any pressure on your foot when you're walking off, that's not a 1 or 2 week injury. You know?
Hey.
Hey, welcome back.
I found an alternate way to get in. I'm calling into my own show. Isn't that something?
Hey, whatever works at this point.
Yeah, whatever works. I'm thinking to myself, wow, I'm calling into my own show, and it's actually working.
Amazing.
I cannot begin to tell you what went wrong there.
You know what it is? We cannot make fun of Ohio State because there's someone with Blog Talk Radio who is probably...
Obviously an OSU fan.
Yeah. But we're just wrapping it up saying you can't settle for field goals when you play Ohio State. And I don't think Beanie Wells will play for another 2 weeks. He's definitely not playing Saturday, and I can't see him playing the following week, really.
Yeah, you probably got a point there. You know, this might be a situation where it's gonna take him the majority of the season to get back the way he needs to be.
Now, I don't know, because Aaron will know, because he's Ohio State slappy. They play Troy, and then I think they have someone else, and then they have Penn State. And maybe that's it. I know they have Penn State coming up here the next couple weeks, but I don't think they go Troy-Penn State. I think they go Troy-somebody else, then Penn State. And it's a primetime game. And I expect him to play against Penn State. But who cares? We spent too much time talking about them.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we got 39 minutes left, and I really want to get to the Detroit Lions. Another dismal performance by the Lions. They're ready to tar and feather John Kitna and run his butt out of town. He his fourth quarter performance was horrible.
Don't you think the Lions are in dire need of a relief pitcher to pitch to play in the fourth quarter like a relief pitcher pitches the ninth inning like K-Rod? Don't you think the Lions are in dire need of a quarterback? No matter where they are, they could be first and 10 on the 10-yard line at the end of the third quarter, and you take Kitten out and put in, well, Stanton or Olofsky or Henson or somebody to come in to play the fourth. They can't be any worse in the fourth quarter than John Kitna.
You know what? This really goes to the what the Lions are all about. Their third-string quarterback has a radio show in Detroit. Where else in the National Football League does your third-string quarterback have a call-in show?
Because we should know this. We should know this for what we do every Wednesday. Anybody can have a radio show.
True enough, but I think that I can't think of any other team in the National Football League where their third-string quarterback has a radio show.
I didn't think Drew Stanton had that much of an education to begin with.
Well, you know, you want to tell some Michigan State jokes, you can feel free. But but the thought occurred to me a couple of days ago that, you know, this is the 75th anniversary of the Lions being the Lions. Of course, they came from Ohio. And moved here, but this is the 75th anniversary of the team, and I thought that each of us would come up with our own 75th anniversary team, and you know, kind of sell the team, like if you will, or to why you got these guys listed here, and you know, kind of compare notes, and guys that are left on the web chat. I'm sorry we had a technical difficulty for a little while there, but I know we still got some guys left on the web chat. You know, to give us your thoughts. Who wants to start?
Go ahead, Truck Turner. It's your birthday.
Oh, so I get to go first because it's my birthday. Sweet. All right. That's great. Hang on. I got to find my list.
It's underneath the Xbox, probably.
No. I just got an unexpected visitor at my door, so I had to kind of shoo her out of the house. and then find my list. Okay, now where did I write? You know, and the thing about it is, when I got the assignment earlier today, it'd been nice to have a few days to kind of, you know, do some research.
I got it last night.
Well, you still got it before I did, but anyway. The thing with
you
the Lions.
Cry about homework?
Yeah, I hate homework. I've always hated homework. What person likes homework? But anyway, you know, I compiled a list. The hardest position was linemen because there haven't really been a whole lot of great offensive linemen in the history of the Lions. But this was a real difficult list to compile. But you know,
it's the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of them are, you know, I went to, you know, looked at the Lions Hall of Famers and it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, I've heard. And they were all, like, way before my time or whatever. But, you know, quarterback, I got Bobby Lane. You know, he's a little bit before my time, but, I've, you know, the stats I've seen, everything, support that. Running back, halfback, Barry Sanders is the obvious choice, but I also have to throw Billy Sims in there because he was, you know, when I was growing up, Billy Sims was the man in Detroit. So, fullback. The only fullback I've ever known to do anything was Corey Schlesinger. And, you know, he was just, you know, Corey Schlesinger was just a monster at fullback. Now, for my offensive line, there's only one name I could pull out that I could even think of, and that was Lomas Brown, because he was about the only decent lineman that I've ever heard of the Lions having. Tight end, Charlie Sanders. My wide receivers, got Mel Gray, Herman Moore, Johnny Morton and Brett Perryman. The last three were more so because those are the guys that stick out mostly in my mind in the era that I've been watching football. And, you know, people are going to say, well, what about, you know, Roy Williams? They're still too new. You know, they haven't proven themselves yet. I mean, they're good ball players or whatever. I had two D linemen, Jerry Ball and Alex Karras. You know, Jerry Ball was just a monster. You know, and Alex Karras, you know, the name speaks for itself. And linebacker, I got my man Chris Spielman. I mean, he went to Ohio State, but we try not to hold that against him around here. Defensive backs, these are guys that I've heard of, but, you know, they were still a little bit before my time. Lynn Barney, Night Train Lane, Yale Larry. You know, like I said, those, they were all kind of behind, you know, ahead of my time. Safety, Benny Blades, you know, he was just Benny Blades would literally knock you out. And I even did a kicker. I mean, you know, it's a toss-up between Eddie Murray and Jason Hansen. You know, they're both played during the time I've watched the Lions, you know, in my lifetime. And so, you know, and then that's pretty much my list. This was a very difficult list.
All right. You want to go or you want me to go, Bill?
It's up to you. It's your show.
I'll go.
Okay.
Let's start offense first. My coach is Buddy Parker, the only guy to win two titles for the Lions, 53 and 54, back when the Lions were a solid playoff team every year. My quarterback, Bobby Lane, nobody even comes close in this category. Wide receivers, I have Herman Moore, and I have Leonard Thompson. Bill just sighed.
I didn't sigh. That wasn't me. I did not sigh.
Wasn't me.
Tight end, Charlie Sanders, of course. Nothing, you know, enough said about him. I had two halfbacks. I could not put Barry Sanders there without putting Billy Sims there. Billy Sims, I think, would have been every bit of the greatest running back the Lions ever had, right up there with Barry Sanders if he hadn't gotten hurt. Only played 4 years with the Lions, but he really carried the team, that team, and those were some bad teams back then. Fullback, Steve Owens. Heisman Trophy winner. He's a very good running back. Played both fullback and halfback in the 70s. Lineman, I could only come up with four linemen. I could not come up with a second guard. I got John Gordy at one guard. He was a very good guard back in the 60s for the Lions. Tackles, I had Lou Creekmore, who played from 50 to 59, and a Hall of Famer at the tackle spot. And everybody, including Aaron, talks about Lomas Brown. You know, he's got to be on my list. He played for between 85 and 98, played a long time at that tackle spot. And the truth of the matter is, they've not been able to replace him yet. Center, I put down Kevin Glover. Place kicker, definitely Jason Hansen. Hansen is the only player of today that is on my list at all, to be honest with you. Defensively, my ends, one is Roger Brown. Roger Brown played with the Lions in the early 60s. He was traded to the Los Angeles Rams, and he became one of the fearsome foursome with the Los Angeles Rams in the late 60s. He was a tall, strong guy. The other end, I got Bubba Baker. We all remember Bubba, don't we?
Yes.
My tackles, I had everybody's pick on there was Alex Karras. Alex Karras was the best defensive tackle the Lions have ever produced. The other one, I put it down, Doug English. Had a solid career with the Lions. Linebackers were actually, to me, the linebackers were the most difficult part of this whole thing because I tried to think of a modern day or a guy that's played in the last 20 years that really stood out at linebacker for the Lions, and I really couldn't think of one that I thought was worthy of the list. I don't know about you, Bill, and you know we'll definitely get to your list in a second. All these guys either played in the 50s or the 60s. I got Mike Lucci and Wayne Walker, and in the middle, Hall of Famer Joe Schmidt. Corners, I agree 100% with what Lon says. Lynn Barney, Hall of Famer, and he kind of revolutionized the position in the late 60s and early 70s, how smooth he was, how quick he was to the football. He was definitely a ball hawk for his time. And the other cornerback, Dick Lane, Night Train Lane, revolutionized the position in the 50s. He was so great that his best tackle, they outlawed it. Once upon a time, the necktie was a legal tackle. Safeties, I got one is Dick LeBeau. He was a very good defensive back in the 60s, defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers now. And the other one, I agree with Lon, Benny Blades. He was one hell of an athlete back in the day with the Lions. Yale Larry is my punter. Kick returner, I have two guys. I have Mel Gray and I got Eddie Drummond. And I got some honorable mentions, but I'm going to wait for Bill to do his list, and then I'll go through honorable mentions. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, mine is, first off, my coach is Buddy Parker, 58-29-2, and gosh, he was 3-1 in the playoffs. If any Lions coach was 3-1 in the playoffs in this day and age, they would build a statue and name half the city after him. And like you said, he won back-to-back league championships. The offensive lineman took me forever because you have to look, and I actually studied, and at tackle I have Lomas Brown, and I also have Lou Kriegmer, but the guards were kind of, there weren't any. I mean, the only one I could think of was Keith Dorney because he really blocked in the 80s for Billy Sims. Eric Andersack, he would have been a great guard. I mean, he was a great ball player in the 90s before he tragically got killed. And Jim Yarbrough was basically a tackle. He did play some guard. And Kevin Glover was a center because Barry Sanders said if he lost Kevin Glover would have been a huge loss to him. My tight end, of course, is Charlie Sanders. That's pretty easy. My wide receivers, I had three of them. I had Herman Moore and Brent Perryman. And I'm sure Perryman would probably be a surprise. But when they ran the run and shoot like they were supposed to run it, and how it was run back in the day, those two guys just got a ton of yards. My third wide receiver is kind of a surprise because I looked and I was like, wow, I did not realize he played with the Lions. It was Hopalong Cassidy played with the Lions and back when in the 50s. And just the stats that he did, able to catch and receiving and running the football. The quarterback.
Isn't it kind of amazing though how many Heisman Trophy winners played for the Lions
that they had, and I just have two on the list, but I was surprised. I looked at that and I could not believe it. And the quarterback, of course, Bobby Layton. I had Billy Sims and Barry Sanders. On defense, my defensive ends are Leon Hart and Robert Porche. The defensive tackles are Alex Karras and Doug English. My linebackers, Joe Schmidt was obvious. That was pretty easy, but I could not figure out any kind of linebackers. But just the way Chris Spielman played and how every down was the last down he thought. And I thought someone else who was underrated, but when he played, he was just as dominant as Spielman. That was Stephen Boyd. And that's sad when you go through 75 years and Stephen Boyd is on a list as a linebacker.
and it's just like I told you, that was the hardest position for me was linebacker.
Yep. And then the defensive backs were Dick Lane, Lombardi, and Yale Lowry. But another one who I put on there, which I was surprised that he played both ways, was Doak Walker. And there's another, I mean, the Lions, if you go back in the 50s, go look at the Lions roster of all the superstars from college that they had on their roster. If they had half these guys now, superstars in college, and they couldn't win, I mean, they had Doak Walker, Leon Hart, Bobby Lane back in the 50s. This team was loaded. Buddy Parker left the Lions and was a terrible coach after that because it showed that you don't have a ton of studs, you're in a world of trouble no matter what era you're playing.
You see what Aaron wrote down? William White?
Right, of course.
Of course, whatever. He's from Lima. I do agree with one thing he said. Mouse Davis was a guru, and he is. And, you know, I have got to, after, I'm not going to bother him until after the season's over. We got to have him back on the show.
Yeah, I got that Portland State hat or something.
And, you know, I believe you were involved with basketball when we talked to Mouse back in March, but Lon got to talk to him, and you got the feeling when you talked to Mouse Davis that, one, he's just a regular schmo, you know? And two, you were like in the presence of football royalty.
Yeah, that was a show that I couldn't sleep after that show. I mean, it was just that big of a deal to me.
I cannot believe I talked to him.
but you know that when you come up, I mean, basically right now the spread is a variation of the run and shoot. You spread
right.
the field as wide as you can. You just go in the shotgun. The run and shoot was never in the shotgun.
That's true. You know, for the most part, everybody puts their stamps, on that offense. And, you know, when I first started running the offense, and I've been running a variation of this offense since 1983, I immediately put my guy back in the gun. And, you know, I ran most of my plays that way. But, I mean, you know, to each his own. But continue with your list.
Oh, and then my kicker was Eddie Murray. For him being in the league so long, being able to kick, I mean, I was telling the story earlier that I have never felt sorry for too many people in my time watching football. But that time in 1983 when the Lions were playing San Francisco in the playoffs, and that's when San Francisco was loaded, mind you, and they went down the end of the game, they walked all the way down the field, and Eddie Murray lined up for that field goal, and Monty Clark, bless his soul, was standing there praying, holding his hands clenched together, looking up in the sky, and just asking, you knew that man, that was his only shot. That was it for him. Was that time, if that kick was good, that would have been it. They would have won that game. They may have lost the next week, but they would have beaten the 49ers. And you knew that was it for him. He was never going to be in that position again to win a playoff game, and he never was. And if Eddie Murray would have made that kick, you just got to wonder how things would have been different, what they would have done, because they had a road after that was very winnable to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was too bad. If you ever had a chance to meet Monty Clark, he is the nicest man you'll ever meet, and he will talk to you about anything. And I asked him when I was at Lions practice about that, and I said, man, you sat there and you were praying so hard, and that ball was going straight down, right down the middle the last minute. It turned to the right and went just right. And he looked at me and he goes, I guess I didn't pray hard enough. And my kick returner was Mel Gray. Mel Gray could not get tackled. Eddie Drummond would get hit and get tackled. But Mel Gray could flat out fly, and he could play wide receiver. Eddie Drummond, they had to work him in to be wide receiver. Mel Gray could be one of the four wide receivers anytime. And I don't want a punter. I don't want a punter because with an offense like that, if we're punting the football, we're in trouble.
I do have to say, you know, once again, you know, we're definitely gonna pencil that in. You know, once college football season is over, we got to hook up with Miles again and have him back on the show, and just you know, the man will talk for an hour and a half. You know, Lana tell you he the man is a talker, and he's got tons of stories.
He's a genius.
I don't know why I was thinking Bill was on that night.
No, you actually wasn't.
No, I was
but
not
you,
on that
you,
night.
You,
I would have remembered
yeah, you,
that.
You took up the slack, though.
Yeah, that was a great night.
Let me give you some of my honorable mention, and then I also have a little list I compiled of some of the the moments in Lions history. You know, some of them are highlights, some of them are not so high, but, you know, most of you guys will remember. Some of my honorable mentions include people like Eddie Murray. Nick Petrosyani was a good fullback in the 60s. And, yes, I put Scott Mitchell on the list. A lot of people don't like Scott Mitchell, but Scott Mitchell, he put points on the board.
You know, they scored over 45 points four times that year with Scott Mitchell at quarterback.
Yes, yes indeed. I also have Greg Landry on the list. Dexter Bussey. I don't know whether you remember old Dexter.
I do. I remember number 24.
Yes, sir. I have, you know, some people are going to throw stuff at me for doing this, but I, under the coaching category, I have Wayne Fonts on the list.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I mean, say what you want about Coach Fonts. That was the last winning era that the Lions had, really. You know, he was a bit of a goofball, but, I mean, they were winning.
He got fired for mediocrity. That sometimes that he would go down and finish around 500, and the Lions fans nowadays will kill for mediocrity.
They're going to build a statue for Wayne Fonts because, really, he's a dynasty compared to what they have now.
Yes, sir. I also have Joe Schmidt on the list for also for being a coach. He's the only guy I got on at more than one category. Somebody that Aaron brought up earlier on the web chat, Mel Farr. He's really the first really big name running back, you know, that the Lions had. And he was a good running back. You know, not great, but he was a good workhorse running back for quite a few years. And no Aaron, no Eric Hipple, no Chuck Long.
What about Jeff Campbell? What about Jeff Chadwick?
Oh, God, now you're really doing some things to me now. Gary Danielson. Milt Plum.
You know that Garo Yupremian was with the Lions?
Yes, I do. I fully remember when Garo Yupremian was a Detroit Lion.
I mean, I'm looking at the all-time roster, and I can't believe some of the names that have played with the Lions that were at one time really good football players, and they come to Lions and their career's over.
You know, Aaron, if they do make a statue to Matt Millen, it'll probably be of him bending over or something.
It'll be the golden toilet in the bathroom, the executive lounge. Here, sit on Matt and take a dump, since he's taken a dump on us the last 10 years.
Other guys I got on the list, Dutch Clark, back in the 30s, a Hall of Fame quarterback. You brought up Doak Walker, who was a double threat Heisman Trophy winner, right?
Doak Walker was. Yes, he was.
Yes, he was. You know, I mean, the people that the Lions had, they were Heisman Trophy winners. Doak Walker, Billy Sims, Barry Sanders. Steve Owens won a Heisman, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, wow. But
Leon
please,
Hart won a Heisman. Leon Hart won a Heisman. Leon Hart won a Heisman. They hit a lot.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I mean, Aaron is just like bringing up Mike McMahon and Joey Harrington and then laughing over it.
How could you not laugh?
Yeah, I mean, both of them don't even come up with one quarterback here. You brought up Keith Dorney and Brett Perryman. Got them on the honorable mention list. Another blast from the past, Alty Taylor. And also got Corey Schlesinger on that list. Defensively, I got Jerry Ball on there. Jerry Beach Ball, as I used to call him. Mike Kofer. Luther Ellis. William
Ray Kruger. I thought Ray Crockett back in the day was a good corner.
He was okay.
He's pretty good.
I can't believe that I put William Gay on the list, but I did. you mentioned Robert Porche and Chris Spielman. Those are the guys I got on that list. Now, like I said, I got this list, you know, and it's in no particular order, but it's of, you know, some significant moments in Detroit Lions history. First one I wrote down was the Lions winning their back-to-back NFL titles in the 50s. They won, was it 53 and 54, I believe?
Yes.
And then they won again in 57, and they have not won anything since 57. Now stop it, Aaron. Charles Rogers. Now Johnny Morton was good. He was a little afraid to go over the middle, but he was pretty good. Freddie Scott was good too.
Pulling him out now.
Yeah, see, Bill, you must have did. You must have did your homework. You can't possibly remember Freddie Scott.
Yeah, number 87 wore two huge blue sweatbands on his arm, and his son played at Penn State.
All right.
Don't ask me why. No, that just never asks. Just
yeah.
Move on.
The next Lion moment is something that's really before you guys' time. The Lions losing a playoff game in 1970
5-0.
To Dallas, 5-0. I remember watching that game and going, you know, even at my young age, going, what the hell? How do you lose a game 5-0? That's another guy that I should have put on that list. That was a wide receiver on that team. Earl McCullough. You remember him? Paul, he was a great track star at USC. And even back in the 60s and early 70s, the NFL was really into trying to make track guys wide receivers. You know, it started with Bob Hayes, and it kind of grew from there. And they drafted Earl McCullough to be a wide receiver. And he was okay. He became kind of their go-to receiver in the early 70s with Greg Landry. But that just popped in my mind. The Lions advancing to the NFC Championship game in 1991. That was their last really, really great year. And, you know, we talked about that earlier, the run and shoot with Miles Davis and Perryman and those guys and Barry Sanders having a very good year from the running back spot in that offense, and like I said, making it all the way to the NFC Championship in 1991. And also in 91, you know, we all remember Mike Utley's injury. Was that against the Jets? I want to say it was against the Jets.
I thought it was against the Rams. I thought it was against the Rams.
Because the Rams? Dennis Bird, I think Dennis Bird got hurt that same year, didn't he, for the Jets?
Yeah. Maybe that's why the Jets are...
It was what's his face? Reggie Brown that got hurt against the Jets.
Right. Okay. I knew the New York Jets was sticking in my head for some reason there.
That's the game Barry Sanders also went over 2,000 yards in a season against the Jets. So.
Yeah. You know, I also got on the list about the Lions drafting all those Heisman Trophy winners. You talk about the ones that they had. Leon Hart, Billy Sims, Steve Owens, Barry Sanders. Who was I missing here?
Doak Walker.
And Hopalong Cassidy, who wasn't an original Lion, but he became one later on and was a Heisman Trophy winner. You know, it's a lot of real quality players that came through this organization and basically wilted, I guess. Two more. The Lions moving to Pontiac in 1975. They've been playing before then in Tiger Stadium and moved to Pontiac. And I got to tell you, I missed them playing in the Silverdome. I have not watched the Lions since in person since they moved from Pontiac. It's for one thing, the tickets are ridiculously expensive now, and they're so hard to come by.
Well, not so much now, because what did they say, Gardner White had to buy the last 3,000 last week, so it wasn't a blackout.
Yeah, but I'm not paying $60-$70 a ticket to watch some.
Never mind. You know, but maybe it's like the Palace where there isn't a bad seat in the house, which is a total load of crap.
Well, I've sat in the press box in Ford Field, and I've walked around the stadium. you could see everything. I mean, it's a great place to see football that doesn't involve the Detroit Lions.
Well, you know, I've been in the press box at Ford Field too, you know, and I've looked around the stadium, and I mean, I'm not saying it's a nice stadium and everything, but all I'm saying is that it was just a matter to me of pure greed by the Lions that they moved back to Detroit in the first place. The only reason they moved back to Detroit was so they can control concessions and parking. And it wasn't, couldn't there have been some kind of way for them and the Pontiac Stadium Authority to come to an agreement so they could get that money and would have stayed in Pontiac?
Well, two, I mean, as well as soda, it was becoming obsolete, the stadium was. I don't know how much renovation you could have done with it. And two, they were not going to have 80,000 people come and watch any team in the next few years. You know that they would be getting 40,000 in there now. They would not. Because really it's the novelty right now of going down to Ford Field.
Yeah.
And that's going to wear off here in the next year or so. People are just going to be like, okay, I've been in there, I've seen it, I've been in there for a concert for high school, for the Motor City Bowl. I'm not going down there to watch this garbage. Because now the only people who are buying up these tickets are out-of-town fans from Chicago and Green Bay. And Cleveland when they come up.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I don't know. I guess I just got that... I can remember watching the Lions, of course, when they were at Tiger Stadium, and you know, Tiger Stadium is not a place to really see sports. And I'm not really sad that Tiger Stadium is gone, and it was not a great place to watch football for sure. But the Silverdome, I mean, that place could get really loud. 80,000 people screaming their lungs out for a team that was really dog crap, you know.
And you got, you know, I have the fond memories of people throwing stuff over the, from the upper levels over, because you're sitting under the overhang, you just see plates and cups, and, you know, I just always waited to see somebody fall off of one of those.
That's one thing I always wish I would have been able to see just out of the, just for curiosity, was a Lions game in Tiger Stadium.
Trust me.
Because then you know the team was good back then, that's why.
But you know what?
It was how football, I guess, was meant to be played outdoors in the mud and snow. I mean, if you got even a little bit of precipitation, Tiger Stadium's turf just turned to a sea of mud.
And, you know, and speaking from experience, it's not natural playing football on a baseball field.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. Hey, I got somebody want to call in with an opinion real quick. We got about 5 minutes to go, and let's see if we can get him on the line. Hello, you're on the locker room. Hello. Okay, I guess not. Hello.
That was Joey Harris's mom calling in saying, "Why didn't you put my son on the list?" That was Vince.
Hello, you're on the locker room.
Hello.
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 Who am I speaking to?
Hello?
Yes, hello. Who are you? And where are you calling from?
Okay, we're going with that one. Let's
Is this the relationship show with Slickback? No, it's not, ma'am. Have a nice day.
Do you speak?
But the last thing I really want to bring up is, you know, like something that I remember from back in the day, the tragic death of Chuck Hughes back in 1971, dying of a heart attack right there on the field. And the thing that I really remember about that game, you know, watching that game on television, was the look that Dick Butkus had on his face. Everybody talked about what you know, how mean Dick Butkus was, and all the stories about Dick Butkus, and they were all true. But the look of terror on his face, and the way I still remember him pointing and waving frantically for somebody to come from the line sideline to help him. You know, he was one of those guys that knew immediately something was seriously wrong. And I don't think I think that was the first and only time that somebody actually has died on the field playing football, for, you know, in the National Football League anyway.
Well, the Buckeyes died Saturday painfully in the Coliseum.
Yeah, they did. They did. They died a slow, painful death.
Rich Rodriguez looked like he was dying midway through the fourth quarter. Charlie Weiss almost died when he got run over.
Oh, you know what? I got to tell you, you know, even though I make my jokes about Notre Dame and all and Charlie Cheeseburger and all that, when I saw him get hit in the leg like that, I went, oh, no, I know he tore his knee up.
Oh, it's gone. MCL, ACL, so.
You know, and I'm really shocked that that doesn't happen more often on the sideline. It seldom happens, and you know, and actually, me and Charlie Weiss have something in common in that area. You know, we both wrecked a knee on the sideline at a football game, so not a club that you want to be a part of.
Yep, amazing. You and Charlie have something in common.
Yes, I will tell you this. Well, I'm going to have to let that go because we got to leave in a couple minutes. It is almost 10:30, so we're going to have to get out of here. I want to thank you guys tonight for listening in and enduring our technical problems in the middle of the show. Friday night, tune in to the Michigan Regional Sports Network for high school football. Game of the week here in the state of Michigan is Dearborn Divine Child faces Saginaw Newville. The Happy's Pizza pregame show is at 6:45. Kickoff is at 7 p.m. here from Saginaw Newville. Looking forward to that because Newville is they're the defending state champions, and I'm looking forward to seeing how good they play.
Yeah, it should be a good football game after what we had to endure Saturday in the monsoon.
Yeah, I'm hoping for nicer weather. It is not a good thing to broadcast the game with a huge mud puddle right up under you.
Let me ask you something for just give me a yes no answer. If you went through a whole day and did not score a touchdown as an offensive coordinator or as a player, would you quit?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Gentlemen, thank you all for calling tonight, and once again, guys on the you guys that are on the web chat, thank you for calling, for giving us your expert opinion, and particularly Aaron Matthews, one of the greatest play-by-play announcers in minor league sports, right up there with Bill, right up there. I mean, 1 and 1A. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you for calling. Tune in next week for the Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio and the Michigan Regional Sports Network. Good night, everybody. See you next week. I'm quiet now.